you may notice that I have a different background today. I'm talking from my apartment in Manhattan after a year of COVID exile upstate. We've gotten our two doses of vaccine. We're not ready to move back yet, but we are starting to spend some weekends here. So a transition is finally happening, I'm happy to say. I didn't speak on a koan during a session last week, so I thought I would make up for that and give you one today. Here's something from the Blue Cliff Record. A monk asked Kyose, "I, your student, am pecking from inside the shell. I beg you, master, please peck from the outside." Kyose said, "But will you be alive or not?" Monk said, "If I were not alive, people would all laugh." Kyose said, "You fool in the weeds, you fool in the weeds." I thought this koan might dovetail nicely with our discussion later this morning on the section from provision to mutuality, because it describes the monk as a chick hatching. And ordinarily, we think of the mother hen simply sitting on the egg, keeping it warm until it's ready to hatch. We could say that's a picture of provision. The mother simply provides whatever it takes, as long as it takes, for the egg to come to maturity and for the chick to hatch. But in this koan, we get a different picture where the chick itself is an agent in its own birth. When it's ready to be born, the chick starts pecking at the shell from the inside. And the mother hen, sensing that, pecks at exactly the same spot in the shell that the chick is pecking at from the inside. And when they hit the same spot in the shell, that's where the shell cracks open and the chick can be born. So that might give us a little image of mutuality, of agency on both parts, that the chick has to do something in order to be born. It doesn't simply receive provision from the mother. Traditionally, Zen teachers are said to wield two metaphorical swords, a sword that gives death and a sword that gives life. The sword that gives death is the one that gives the great death, that kills all delusion, kills the ego, cuts the ground out from under us so that we have nothing left and that we drop into realization. And the way those are the dominant stories that we tend to remember. They're the stories like Bodhidharma meeting the emperor. The emperor thinks of himself as a Buddhist because of the good works he's been doing. and ask what merit he's accumulated. Bodhidharma says, no merit whatsoever. Who are you? The emperor asks. I don't know, replies Bodhidharma. Takes away everything that the emperor imagines would be a suitable or even sane answer to his questions. And likewise, when Rinzai responds to a student's question, what is Buddha, by hitting him upside the head, or a teacher who, whenever a student asks him a question, simply turns around and faces the wall. All these are wielding the death-giving sword. They cut away all extraneous conceptualization and thought, leave the student with nothing whatsoever. But there's also the life-giving sword. And in a way, that's what the student here is asking for. He says, Master, I'm just on the brink of realization. Please do something. Make that last gesture. Give me that last word that's going to let me break out into realization, come alive. When we're confronted with the gateless gate, we initially feel that we're up against the gate with no entrance, that there's no way in, no way through. That's the sword that kills, completely blocked. And yet we may suddenly realize you can enter anywhere. The gateless gate means everything is a gate. And that's the sword that gives life. When Dogen tells you that practice and realization are identical, he's opening the gate wide open. Where you are is the very thing you've been looking for, the sword that gives life. This koan, however, has a subtle twist to it. And I remember, I think when I was first starting out many years ago, I remember right hearing Bernie Glassman talk about this koan. And he said, when everyone hears it for the first time, they assume that they, the student, are the baby chick inside the egg. He says, but that's not right. You're not the chick, you're the shell. What does that mean? See, the koan actually has all these dualisms built into the question, into the imagery. The student feels he's stuck inside and wants to get outside. What's the difference between inside and outside? What is there to get? Where is he trying to go? How is he going to be different if he's outside? The master plays with that a little bit, gives him some rope and says, will you be alive or not? It's another kind of dichotomy, alive or dead. The student says, well, if I'm not alive, if you do your best to awaken me and I don't come out alive, people will laugh, presumably laugh at you, the teacher, but you haven't done a very good job if that's the best you can do, and I don't come to realization, boy, you've failed on the job. And Kiyosan just shakes his head and says, you're a fool in the weeds, that you're still completely stuck in delusion. And the delusion has to do with these dichotomies of inside, outside, alive or dead, as if there's something to gain, someplace to get, right? To see ourselves as the shell is to say that our ego, our self, is the thing that sets up a false boundary, a false dichotomy between inside and outside, between alive or dead. That the ego is this brittle structure that creates a division where we think we're being excluded from something, where we think we have to become something other than what we already are. So it's when that cracks, when the shell drops off, then there's no separation between the chick and the hen. They're just both out in the world together, which is really the state we've been in all along. We've not been separate from our Buddha nature. We've not been separate from life. We've created in our mind a kind of false sense of individuality or separation, cut ourselves off from the wholeness of things, imagining that we have this shell, a solid, permanent shell of ego around us. And it's really empty, like everything else. But I think for our purposes, it's also useful to think about the dual role of the teacher with these two swords, and what is the role of the student in eliciting the teacher's action, and what is the agency of the student. I think that when we emphasize the one side of that, you get these stories of heroic effort on the part of the student. You get the stories of the student who cuts off his arm in order to prove his sincerity, or sitting sesshin, morning through night, never getting off the cushion, never. Not budging at all for 7 days, pushing themselves to extremes in order to finally break through. And there you have the sense of the effort is almost entirely on the student's part, that the teacher just sort of creates this setting for the practice to happen, but is mostly there just say, nope, not yet, not yet. Keep going. Try harder. This isn't it yet. Keep going. The student does all the work. On the other hand, you get stories, typically from a Soto perspective, but when you hear stories, say, of Shunryu Suzuki, you hear these stories of that emphasize presence and gentleness and acceptance, that the student comes all caught up in effort and anxiety, in every way sort of feeling like, this isn't it, I've got to get something, please give me something. and Suzuki's whole manner was one to display. There's nothing lacking. There's nothing hidden. There's nothing missing. Just sit. Everything is already here. And his whole presence conveyed that to the student, a kind of, oh, this really is it, right? A kind of being able to trust and rest in something that right here that you thought was far off. Part of what we'll be discussing in the paper later this morning, again, is this question about what is the role of the student versus the role of a patient in analytic treatment? What's the role of the analyst versus the role of the teacher? See, in a traditional medical model, when you use words like treatment, it makes it seem like the patient is the passive recipient of the analyst's empathy or interpretation or activity. There, it's as if the patient is like the egg that the hen is just sitting on, right? That all the egg has to do is sit there and absorb the warmth of the hen as long as it takes to come to maturity. The chick or the egg doesn't have any agentic role in it, right? It's just the recipient. When we think that way, we think of treatment in terms of provision, providing empathy, providing interpretation. And if they're the right things, they go in and the egg hatches. But when we talk about mutuality, we talk more about there being agency on both sides. What is it that the patient as well as the student has to do? What kind of commitment is involved? Certainly both practices, the most basic thing is just showing up. And that's non-trivial, making a commitment to show up every day to practice or analysis, or to do some kind of commitment, to just stick with something day in, day out, week in, week out, year in, year out, just showing up. It's no small thing. But what do we expect ourselves beyond that? Often I say that the main requirement of the student is emotional honesty, a kind of willingness to admit what they see in the mirror, to not use practice as a way to simply buff up their image, to try to feel special or intact, but to allow practice to be a place where vulnerability emerges. On the other side, sometimes it means being able to admit not just your vulnerability, but your strength and your agency. Not just what's been done to me, where I find myself, but what am I going to do now? What am I going to do differently? How am I the co-creator of the situation I find myself in? See, I think in some ways, what used to be thought of as treatment is becoming more and more like a practice, agency on both sides of the equation. But on the other hand, what is in Zen considered just a practice also is taking on more aspects of a treatment, in the sense that the teacher is seen as having a wider range of responsibility, that what we provide is care and containing and holding that sword that gives life, not just the sword that's cutting through delusion. Zen practice is not just about the student making a superhuman effort, but the teacher has a different level of responsibility as well, including an expanded sense of their ability to do harm, not just through ethical violation, but through the kind of misattunement that just runs roughshod over people's differences and vulnerabilities. Typically, you know, when a new student comes to the Zendo, the first thing I will ask them is, what are you doing here? I want them to ask themselves, what do they think they're looking for? What's the problem? Why would you do this practice in the first place? But also, what is it that you think practice is? What are you literally doing here when you sit on a cushion? Are you trying to quiet your mind? Are you trying to concentrate? Do you feel just buffeted about? What are you actually doing? I think this koan in our talk about from provision to mutuality gives us a chance to also turn that question around and ask, what is it you think I'm doing here?